What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Off the Bench. I'm Brandon Carney alongside Pat Gustafson. And Pat, this is actually my first podcast episode on this ridiculous ultra-wide monitor that I got. So I can actually see everything all at once now, and it's wonderful.
That does sound really nice. I'm tiny Mac laptop boy. So yeah. We've got several tabs going on here.
I finally do not need to change tabs really ever, I don't think. But this is going to be maybe the most efficient pod I've ever done. So pretty excited about that.
So what made you go with the wide one instead of like two?
This was the nicest and had the best specs I could find of like any monitor kind of in that genre. Like if there was a two wide that had similar, like I use it to game as well. So if it had like similar response time and similar, you know, resolution, I didn't need to go three wide, but it was kind of just available. And I was just kind of like,
I mean, why not? Ball.
This is a tax write off for your boy. So we said, send it. Why not? But Pat, this was a busy, busy week in the NFL, which is always nice this time of year for the pod. In the show today, we've got NFL Combine reactions, we've got franchise tags, and we are inching ever so closer to NFL free agency to the point where we are starting to see some of these dominoes fall that we've talked about over the last few weeks. Yeah. But probably most importantly, Pat, today was the franchise tag deadline, which we will get into. One more thing we wanted to mention off the top is RIP to a legend, Chris Mortensen, longtime ESPN NFL reporter, a guy who I think anybody our age or older, and even, you know, some people younger, I guess really anybody, Pat, probably grew up on this guy to some extent.
It's so crazy because, like, kids these days, for younger people, you know, Adam Schefter is like the NFL insider, but for us it was Chris Mortensen and it was John Clayton too, to a lesser extent, and they're both gone. And yep. And that, you know, it's just, you know, everyone's getting older, and obviously a lot of people still like to rag on Chris Mortensen for the 11 out of 12 deflated footballs report for Deflategate, which again, obviously, I think people like to think that reporters make stuff up. Like, they just get bad sources. He just got fucked by a source. But you just see all the really, really positive things people said about him. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just took me back to being a kid, and on SportsCenter, NFL Live, the Mort Report would come on and just...
Yep.
Oh, God. Like, we're getting old, man. Shit's sad.
It sucks, man. We're going to miss the guy for sure, but his contributions to ESPN overall will definitely not be forgotten. But, Pat, we've got
Mickey
plenty
Mouse
of business.
Salute to you.
Absolutely. We got plenty of business to take care of, so let's get into our news for the day.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
So, off the top, a Benchwarmer brand favorite and a podcast favorite, Russell Wilson. His fate is finally officially known. The Broncos are moving on from Mr. Unlimited. Now, he won't officially be a free agent until free agency opens on March 13th, but he is free to talk with other teams now with this news being released. Pat, I put together a little, you know, career highlights slash eulogy. So we'll run through a few things for Russ here, if you don't mind. Feel free to interject at any point. But this is just the timeline of Russ in Denver. All right? I just wanted to give the people a little recap. So, I almost forgot. I have music to accompany this. Excuse me.
God, all right, damn it.
We've got the eulogy music going. So, on March 16th, 2022, the Broncos traded for Russell Wilson to make up for missing out on Aaron Rodgers, which was the only reason they hired Nathaniel Hackett. Let me turn this down. I suspect this might be a little too loud. I can't tell how loud this is going to come across in the final product. Okay, a few months later, September 1st, 2022, Russ signs a five-year, $245 million contract extension with the Broncos. What could go wrong? On September 12th, 2022, Russ makes his debut at Seattle, his former team, losing 17-16, partially thanks to that infamous 64-yard field goal attempt by Nathaniel Hackett. But here's the real headline, Pat, as it pertains to Russ. He threw for 340 yards in that game. His only 300-yard passing game in year one with the Broncos. Meanwhile, crazy. Russ also became a meme in more ways than one. You had Broncos Country Let's Ride, the Danger Witch collab with Subway, the reports of him having his own personal office away from his teammates. Basically, he was in the spotlight more than ever while having the worst season of his career by far. Then we jump into year two with Sean Payton, who basically told him, to shut the fuck up. You're not a politician. Stop kissing babies and doing all this other unnecessary shit and focus on football. Seemed to help a little bit. They got the most juice possible out of Russ. Statistically, he was much better than he was last year, but it still wasn't enough. And now Russ is getting cut. The Broncos are about to eat $85 million in dead money, more than the last two dead money contracts combined. And oh, by the way, the trade for Russ may not have netted the Seahawks a ton of game-breaking talent. We talked about this last week, but they did get draft picks that turned into starting tackle Charles Cross, starting linebacker Boye Mafe, and one actual game-breaking talent that I'm sure the Broncos would love to have right now. Imagine him alongside Pat Surtain, Devon Witherspoon. Broncos country, goodbye. It's the end of Russ in Denver. So, I just wanted to give a little recap of what exactly Russ's tenure in Denver was. Pat, I think the funniest part of the entire thing is that that contract extension didn't even kick in. This was just him playing out the rest of the Seattle deal. They didn't sign him to that.
And like, he was content to kind of just play out the Seattle deal, but Denver was the one who was kind of like, hey, let's work out an extension and add.
Bottle, folks. Sorry, just in case anyone listening.
Oh, that's right. I forget that normal people and stuff listen on Spotify. But yeah, I just think that while it was the right decision, he kind of got done dirty a little bit, I think. Just a little bit, because he was never going to succeed either under Nathaniel Hackett, God forbid, or Sean Payton, because basically it was almost like a known thing around the NFL, apparently, that Sean did not want Russell Wilson and that Russell Wilson was going to have to blow him away to stay there. And he wasn't that bad. I mean, you look at the numbers. The numbers are not eye-poppingly different than year one. Obviously, less interceptions, more touchdowns, you know, a slightly better completion percentage, but for him to basically just be the scapegoat of this organization making bad decision after bad decision, you know, it seems just a little like, I don't think he was quite as bad. Year one was awful. Year one was laughable. Yeah. But I don't think his whole tenure there was truly that bad. I think it's more so just going to be a disaster in the sense of now how far it's going to set them back in the future. You know, how it possibly already set them back in terms of like Devon Witherspoon or Noah Fant or you know, Shelby Harris, whoever. But the funniest thing was his actually a really, you know, humble, you know, like thank you to Denver, where he thanked everyone except ownership and Sean Payton.
I didn't see that.
Like, he was literally thanking the cafeteria workers by name. Mm-hmm. Like, a very nice, heartfelt tribute, and not a single mention thanking everyone else. Which, like, honestly, if I was Russ, too, I'd be like, a big fuck you. I'm going to take my fucking $85 million in peace.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him. I think you make a good point about Sean Payton just being the one that clearly didn't want Russ. Because I think if you had any other head coach, or like, let's say Nathaniel Hackett wasn't a complete fucking disaster and he was still here, like, I think if we saw this kind of improvement from year one to year two with Russ, he would have at least been worth keeping around with this contract. Like, maybe you bench him and you draft a guy this year, like we all expect the Broncos to draft a guy now anyway. I think Russ is a decent enough guy to have around as like a vet backup, but especially with that money, like, they're paying him $85 million to not play for them. Like, that is how much they hated this guy and wanted him the fuck out of there. So I think if there was a coach that was a little more willing to deal with him, or just maybe a little more patient, I don't know what the answer is. I think you could see Russ maybe still in Denver, albeit in a backup role, but it was kind of just this bridge was burned, this relationship was beyond repair, and coupling that with the fact that he was not great on the field, we've got Russ finding a new home, and we've got, I mean, it has to be the worst contract in NFL history, right? With how it played out. Like, there's really no argument.
Right now, yes. I don't think it will be the worst. I think our boy Groper Cleveland, unless he turns it the fuck around significantly and soon, I think he's going to surpass that. But yeah, it's just, and again, just the fact that they extended him. Like, if they traded for this contract, like, a little different, but not only did they trade for him, they went and paid him this enormous sum of money. Just a complete disaster, but watch out, it's spicy.
Oh my God, I will never get that out of my head. Pat, you touched on our boy Groper Cleveland. So you think that's going to play out as the worst contract? Does that mean you also think that's going to play out as the worst trade of all time? Because right now, these two are definitely in contention. I mean, if you want to go back, you know, a little deeper into history, it's really only these two and then the Herschel Walker trade as far as like worst values for one team in one trade. Do you think the Russ trade is worse, or do you think the Deshaun trade is or will be worse?
I mean, I think with the Deshaun trade, you have to factor in who he is. Like,
agreed.
You could say a lot about Russell Wilson being a diva and all this stuff, but, you know, good guy, you know, a good guy.
Yeah.
We're talking about someone who had been out of football for essentially, well, for a whole year, and then obviously he missed, you know, 11 more games.
Yeah.
Not playing football, and to just the scumbag. And now it turns out that scumbag is not very good at football anymore.
Yeah.
Like, if Deshaun came back and was Deshaun of old, great.
Oh, sure, we're not talking about this, yeah.
But that's the thing, but that's not the case, and I just think you combine everything with Watson, especially with the Browns are winning games with Joe Flacco, with 100-year-old Joe Flacco.
Future so, like, Patriot Joe Flacco, might I add.
Oh, here we go. So, So the fact that that team is that close, that defense is so good, they've got a great running game, they've got a great offensive line, and then just shit quarterback play to go behind it. Like,
yeah,
I don't foresee them, you know, getting to a Super Bowl, God forbid winning a Super Bowl with him under center. With Russ, it's just like, they just went and got a guy that was just right about to fall off the cliff.
Yeah.
Prime.
They just didn't know it.
And I think we've been spoiled a little bit by, like, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and guys who have just played forever. Mm-hmm. But, like, this is the NFL. Like, guys don't play forever. Yeah. And, you know, I think we've been spoiled by the fact that some of these quarterbacks have had insane primes. But, insane primes. That matched the microphone right when you did that.
Oh, that was
perfect.
True.
That was perfect. God, sorry. God, I am cooked.
Pat's got ADD today. It's all right.
Today. okay, no, that's what you're going to thought. Russ.
Quarterback's getting older.
Yeah. But, like, I think they just kind of thought, like, oh, Russ is going to, you know, Russ has still got a lot left in the tank. Turns out he didn't. He just flat out didn't.
No, I thought the same. I'm not going to sit here on my high horse and be like, oh, I knew this trade was bad from the jump. I made a prediction that it was going to be Broncos to the Super Bowl the year he got traded there, because I was just following the Matt Stafford formula that the Rams were following. I think that's what the Broncos themselves were trying to do. It's like, look, this team's super talented. They're a quarterback away. And I still think that was probably true. It's just Russ was not a quarterback of that magnitude that they needed when they were a quarterback away. So, you know, definitely a wet fart of a way for his career to go down in Denver. But as far as it pertains to, like, worst trade of all time, it's easy to look at this one kind of in totality now that it's over. I think the Deshaun one is certainly trending toward being worse, because we've now got, you know, I know last year ended due to injury, but still, we've got basically a two-season sample size now of what Deshaun is, and what he is nothing close to what he was in Houston, which is what they paid for. And he's a bad dude.
And fully guaranteed.
And they traded more picks than the Broncos, more first rounders than the Broncos did to get him. So you've got the Texans, who landed, I believe it was Kenyon Green in the 2022 draft. In 2023, it was the asset that basically allowed them to net Will Anderson, which is massive. And then this upcoming draft, we'll see what it is. Obviously, the pick isn't super high, because despite Deshaun's being bad and his injury, the Browns still had a good season. So we're looking at a pick, somewhere in the 20s. So we'll find out what that turns into. But yeah, as of right now, These trades are neck and neck. We'll put it that way. Yeah, I could see it ending up being either one.
But the thing, too, with Denver is we're going to be sitting here for the next few years, every offseason, be like, oh, well, they've got, you know, their cap is strangled by Russell Wilson's contract. We're still going to be talking about this until the whole thing is played out, really. Because, like you said, it's kind of played out, but it really hasn't. Because, like, this is really going to hinder them for the next few years, too.
Yeah, I did see somebody say, you know, because I tweeted that I don't ever want to see somebody say that money is a reason a team can't or won't move on from a guy ever again. I'm like, if this team is willing to eat a bajillion dollars in dead money, like, no, I just wanted it to be a lesson that no team is going to sit there with bad quarterback play or bad coaching just because of what they're paying a guy. But somebody was like, yeah, but the Broncos owners are the Walmart heirs or whatever. They can afford. I'm like, the cap is still the cap. This is still $40 million a year tied up into the cap that they can't use. Whether they're more willing to be, you know, frugal, not frugal, the opposite of frugal, and spend that money for a guy to not pay play for their team, that's fine, but it's still affecting them the same way it would affect anybody. Pat, this is some news on what Russ could possibly be doing next. So, according to Jeremy Fowler, Russ wants to help his new team by being a bargain, possibly on the vet minimum, since Denver's already paying him $39 million. Totally fair. Totally fair for Russ to not, you know, be like, hey, you better pay me $20 million or else I'm not coming. This is basically just his contract. He can look at it that way, that $39 million. And he also wants to go to a team, according to Fowler, that not only to win, but that has an infrastructure of winning. So this is interesting to me because if he's looking for that, that tells me that he's not going to go somewhere to be a clear starter. Like what team that is set up to win and has a history of winning is really going to accept him as a starter? Well, I can think of maybe one.
I can think of one, but like, do we consider 9 wins a season winning? Do we consider winning records for 20 years or whatever winning?
I think for argument's sake, we do. And that team is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are currently the Vegas favorites to land Russell Wilson at minus 200. So they fit the description of what Russ is looking for. If I look at this from a Steelers perspective, I don't really get it, because to me, Russ and Pickett are essentially two sides of the same coin. I mean, they're different. I think they're different ends of their careers, obviously, but like Pickett is a guy who, you know, if you want to give him another year to see what he's got, feel free, but I think we realize he's not very good. But Russ is also just not very good. So what's the point? Unless you're going to clear out your QB room, bring in Russ, and then maybe try to, I don't know, draft somebody next year. I just don't see this team being overly competitive or having it make a very big difference by bringing in Russell Wilson and making him the starter.
I don't necessarily think it's going to be a big difference, but we talked about last week how Russ's ceiling is very capped. Like, he had an okay year this past year. I think that's the best way to sum it up. But there was a point where, like, what, he had more touchdowns and less interceptions than Patrick Mahomes. There was something going around at the beginning of the season about him. But Kenny Pickett, we have seen his floor is hell.
Yeah, his floor is unstartable completely.
With Russ at this point, I think based on what we saw last year, his floor is like you've got a smart veteran who can at the very least not be a downgrade on this pretty good supporting cast. You've got, you know, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Pat Freiermuth. I'm not a Najee Harris fan, but you've got Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. Like, this team is not awful, and we know, and we hear about the defense. That's all we hear about is that Steelers defense. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily think he's going to vault them directly into contention, but I do think, especially if they're only paying him $1 million or $2 million a year,
yeah,
I do think that's worth it over Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph, even, who at this point I feel like if it's going to be one of those two, it's going to be Rudolph over Pickett. But,
true, it could be,
but I just think it's not going to be like a crazy jump, but you're not taking a huge swing at it the way the Broncos did. It's almost like they're bunting. It's almost like they're bunting or check swinging, which, like, so I think the risk isn't terribly low. They're going to win 9 or 10 games regardless, you know, with Mike Tomlin's curse. So, but more so just that's the only place where he's going to go where he can start. And I'm saying that because if he goes to Las Vegas,
Pat, you and I are in the same boat here. Like, we both are fans of teams that theoretically have this opening. Well, and the thing don't want to think about
the difference with the Patriots is they have one of the top three quarterbacks in the draft in their hands if they want it, correct. As opposed to the Raiders, who are sitting there at 13, where they're going to have to trade up if they want JJ McCarthy. And we talked about how Bo Nix called Mark Davis ugly. That totally happened. So he's not going to get drafted there. So that's why I'm more scared. I'm way more scared than I would be if I was you, just because the Raiders are just kind of more a less than great situation. A less than great situation revolving it. So
yeah, the Patriots essentially have said reports have come out that the Patriots have a plan to draft a quarterback at 3 and bring in a vet to, you know, mentor that quarterback and start until that quarterback is ready to go, which, like, to me, Pat, is music to my fucking ears. So I think you're probably right. It is maybe a little less likely that Russ goes to a situation like that. And yeah, as far as the Steelers go, like, I guess I am with you. It is probably an upgrade over Pickett. Russ this year, one thing Russ ironed out this year compared to last year was he stopped with the game-breaking turnovers as much as he had in year one, which is big because having that floor on a team like the Steelers where, you know, that defense can carry, much like what the Browns did this year. Like, they had a revolving door of quarterbacks, and as much as we like to talk up Joe Flacco, in totality, he still wasn't that good. It was just he did enough. That is the kind of thing Russ can do. My thing is just, like, as a Steeler, like, if you're a Steelers fan and you are heading into next season with Russell Wilson as your quarterback, like, yeah, it's probably better than Pickett for that 1 year, but, like, I don't know. I just feel like that sucks. That's just kind of a dud of a move, but I understand not every team is in a position to make a move for a guy that could be the true future.
Any move they could make realistically is going to be a dud.
Yeah.
There's just, again, like the Raiders, Steelers are in a worse position to try and get someone, but... And you look at it like Mike Tomlin, obviously a very, you know, a veteran coach. They've got a great culture there. And, like, not to bring up our boy Arthur Smith again, but I could easily see Russell Wilson being the Ryan Tannehill of that Steelers offense. Like, he's not going to light it up, but, like, I don't know. The Steelers are just such, like, a mediocre team to me. Like, I don't know. Mediocre feels a little, because they're going to, you know,
they're going to make the playoffs. Watch. Fucking shit.
Or get really close to it, but from Russ's perspective as well, like, again, if he wants to start, I think teams like New England, like Las Vegas, like Minnesota are going to prefer to go in other directions.
Yeah, I agree with you. My other thought outside of the Steelers, just to try and spitball and find potential fits for Russ, and this doesn't necessarily fit if what Fowler said is true about him looking for, you know, a winner and an infrastructure of winning, but a team I thought about was Chicago, Pat, just because Russ's former offensive coordinator and Tufts alum Shane Waldron is going to be in Chicago now. Caleb Williams is likely basically 101% to be the number one pick and head to Chicago. So, you know, you could look at a guy like that and think maybe he needs a veteran mentor who's been around the league a while, and maybe Russ could be that guy if he is willing to accept a true backup role, because I don't think anybody has any illusions about Caleb not starting week one of next season. So that's just a team kind of looking at it. You know, maybe there's a fit there. Maybe Waldron. I don't know what Waldron thinks of Russ. Just because they work together doesn't mean he truly likes the guy. But
even at the end of his Seattle run, it was getting a little like, I mean, he missed some games, but like it was like his best years in Seattle, probably most of them came with Daryl Bevel and not Shane Waldron to begin with. And they actually, because they had Brian Schottenheimer in there too. How did they even really cross paths?
I believe Waldron was only the OC in 2021.
So it was only one year. Exactly where he wasn't great. Wasn't terrible, but he wasn't Russ. He wasn't Russ, so you never know. I think that's a good spot in theory, but I think that's just if he accepts that. Like, if all these teams like the Minnesotas, the Seattle, excuse me, the Pittsburghs, the Las Vegases, the Atlantas, well, maybe not. But, you know, I think if they say, hey, we're going to go in a different direction, then Carolina's another great, you know, another great idea there to bring in a veteran with Bryce Young.
That was a thought I had too, and I only backed off on it because they still have Dalton under contract for another year, and what's the point of getting rid of Dalton to just sign Russ? And they'd have to eat, like, it was like $5 million in dead money. Yeah. I'm just like, you got one mid veteran to have mentor your guy. You don't really need to change course. But yes, that thought did cross my mind, because Canales was in Seattle for so many years as, you know, quarterback's coach and passing game coordinator and all this stuff. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where Russ ends up. I kind of feel for Steelers fans. I mean, look, maybe it's hard to say, like, would Steelers, like, asking Steelers fans, would you be satisfied with a season that played out the way the Browns did, right? Like, you go in with maybe low-ish expectations, and then, you know, Russ just kind of guides a great defense and a good enough offensive skill group to a playoff appearance, and then you lose. Because nobody's going to think a Russell Wilson Steelers team is going to win a Super Bowl. They're fucking not going to do that. But if you can at least tell Steelers fans, hey, you know, we know you're not in position to really find your quarterback of the future. Maybe this is just a fun little stepping stone year. Maybe Russ can put it together enough. You can win a playoff game, get these guys some experience. That might be enough. I think sometimes I think in terms of, like, not Super Bowl or bust, but like build for the Super Bowl or bust. And to me, Russ isn't a progress towards that, but there's not really much else they can do.
But exactly, like I said, I think no matter what they do, they are not going to have that quarterback of the future unless they get a surprise late round dart or trade up or who knows? Who knows? But yeah, I just think if that's a situation they're in, like, why not?
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Russ, a tough spot for Steelers fans if it comes to it, but who knows, maybe he puts together some magic if he does go to the team that he is currently the Vegas favorite to land on. Pat, as far as the Broncos are concerned, their next move at quarterback, I mean, I can't imagine it's Jarrett Stidham. Maybe it is, who knows, but the Broncos, I suspect their next move will be to find a quarterback in the draft. They are in a spot where they could trade up and go ahead.
Taysom Hill.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
Who'd you think I was going to say?
JJ McCarthy, which you wrote on this paper.
Well, that's not the funny one. That's not the funny part.
I know. Taysom Hill to the Broncos has been rumored since Sean Payton put pen to paper there. That would be fucking hilarious to see Taysom as a full-time starter. But yeah, my expectation is the Broncos are going to be one of those teams that do not hesitate or, you know, let a quarterback that they want fall by the wayside if they feel like they have the assets and the ability to move up for one. That could be JJ McCarthy. I think it would be a little more surprising if they moved into the top three. So, yeah, you know, just because every team in the top three, you know, kind of needs a quarterback, so I can't imagine they trade out. But JJ McCarthy could very well be a Bronco, or Pat, this could be a situation where we find Michael Penix or Bo Nix as a surprising maybe week one starter on a team like the Broncos, where they don't draft him with that being the initial intent, but if you head into camp with, you know, only one of those guys and Stidham, obviously you're gonna be like, all right, they're gonna have a real shot to maybe
they're basically
be the
gonna be the Bucks of last year is what that sounds like.
Yeah, basically, Denver is not seeming like they are going to be a player for, you know, Justin Fields or Kirk Cousins or these other quarterbacks that are going to be available. So this is their answer is probably going to have to be through the draft, and we will just have to see who that ends up being.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, like we talked about how the Steelers are going to be mediocre. The Broncos, you know, they've got the Chiefs in their division. We're expecting a huge jump from the Chargers. The Raiders are usually good for eight or so wins in a season. Like, that's a tough division to play in. Like, I don't know if Bo Nix or Jarrett Stidham gives them much of a shot when they don't have a terrible cast of characters around that quarterback position.
Yeah,
and Sean Payton.
Again, it's like you can't, you know, just go into a lab and build your quarterback, though. So you got to just play with the pieces that are available to you. And maybe Penix or Nix is that guy. Maybe it's somebody else. Maybe it's Sam Hartman with his nice hair. Pat, the other big move we had over the past week, Marquez Valdes-Scantling got released. I'm just kidding. That did happen, but fuck that guy. Mike Evans signed. Yeah, he got released like a day after we recorded last week's pod. MVS got released. Just FYI to finish that thought. Mike Evans, though, signed an extension with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 2 years, $52 million. So this takes away the clear-cut, far and away, best potential wide receiver free agent on the market. And honestly, Pat, I'm a little surprised just at the timing because it sounded like Evans was, you know, pretty set on at least testing free agency. But the Bucks, I guess, came to him with an offer that he couldn't refuse, which I get. I mean, $26 million a year is no joke. And look, this is a good fit for Mike. We've seen what he's done in Tampa for years, assuming they bring back Baker. You know, from a fantasy perspective, Mike is going to be an interesting asset next year once again. But now, this wide receiver class, free agent-wise, Pat, is ass. Like, we're looking at, T. Higgins is theoretically available for trade, but the top guys available now free agent wise for now, you know, and this could change as well, is Calvin Ridley and Hollywood Brown. And I know that's not, you know, bottom barrel receivers, but those are not guys I'm excited about. Like, if your team is looking for a new wide receiver one and they're like, this is our big splash move, That's bad.
And apparently the Jags really want Calvin Ridley back. Like,
which I do not understand at all, because they have to, what is it? They have to give the Falcons a second or third round pick just for the, if they keep Calvin Ridley on the roster. That was the condition, which is why people thought they would not re-sign them. There's a compensatory pick situation.
Maybe they just don't care.
I guess they just want to keep Calvin. I mean, sure, look, maybe he's got some juice that we don't know about, but that's a little surprising of a development to me, because I have been seeing the same thing, that it seems like he's going to stick around. But whether that is the case or not, this is still a very, very mid free agent wide receiver class. The big thing to note there is that it's shaping up, and we've kind of known this, but it's shaping up even more so, that this wide receiver draft class is super deep.
That's where all the money's getting made.
This is where teams that are wide receiver needy are going to need to be moving and shaking in the draft to find their answer, because I do not think they're going to find it in free agency. And I mean, there's the obvious benefit of the guys in the draft don't cost you much money up front. You hope they'll cost you money down the line, but God, I would rather at this point take a gamble on, you know, maybe one of the tier two draft wide receivers and hope they turn into a stud, which they very well could, then pay Calvin Ridley, you know, in the teens of millions of dollars a year kind of deal. So I think this is just, it's a downer for teams that have a lot of cap space and need receivers, i.e. the Patriots, because now we need to just, you know, hope that we get one in the draft and can maybe, I don't know, trade back up in the first round or just find one in the second. But these teams that need receivers and have cap space, it's like, sorry, the store's empty. We're sold out. We got nobody left, because unless you want Tyler Boyd, you're kind of shit out of luck. So
Gabe Davis.
God, fuck Gabe Davis.
Honestly, I'm not completely out on Gabe Davis, just in the sense where it was.
Can you stop? He's trash.
It was the opportunity. Like, his opportunity was inconsistent. He's not. Yeah, they didn't throw him the ball every other week.
He played 98% of snaps. If they weren't throwing him cardio. The ball, if they weren't throwing him the ball, that tells me something's fucking wrong with him.
My door's not completely closed on Gabe Davis in a new setting.
Oh my God. He had two different coordinators this year, and neither one was able to get him the ball. What does that tell you? All right.
Well, Joe Brady was just like, run. Right.
I guess. Oh, man. Pat, you can have Gabe Davis in our draft. That is all you, my man. All right. We will move on. There was a big retirement, Pat, and as you so eloquently put it here, it is Taylor Swift's boyfriend's brother has retired. Jason Kelce hanging him up after many years in the NFL. I believe he's 36 years old. So great career from Jason. Did have a Super Bowl victory. I feel like his Super Bowl win kind of, people almost forget about it because it was like before he was like really in the spotlight as a personality. All people remember now is the Eagles falling short, you know, in the Super Bowl to the Chiefs, and then not even making it this past year. But Jason does retire with a ring, which is nice. And yeah, look, if you haven't seen the video of his press conference, very emotional, especially if you are an Eagles fan or just a fan of Jason or a fan of football. You know, maybe bring a tissue with you if you're going to go ahead and watch that, because it was definitely emotional. Travis was crying. Everyone's fucking crying. It was a very cool send-off for him. And, I'm sure this is not the last we've seen of Jason Kelce. The man is got the podcast. He's been everywhere. I can't imagine.
Let's be honest. He is the next star of sports media.
Yeah, like, he is.
And Travis is too. Whenever Travis decides to hang it up as well, these two, like, these two are basically what people want the Mannings to be. Because,
ooh, yeah, that's true.
The Mannings are boring. The Manning cast, I don't watch it much, because, like, I'd rather listen to traditional commentary than those two just pause for long amounts of time. Eli's just not meant for TV, but these two, oh my God. These two have the knowledge, and they have the personality, and obviously now they have the fame. You know, Taylor Swift has completely put them on. You know, Travis Kelce is, you know, what would you say? Like, Travis Kelce, one of the best tight ends in NFL history. He's probably like a C-list celebrity before Taylor Swift. Like, not even maybe.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. Not even maybe.
It's hard to have like an unbiased perspective of how popular or well-known Kelce was for like non-NFL fan. But yeah, I'm sure it was basically nobody before Taylor. I just don't know where it is now for like non-football fans and just casual people. I'm sure, yeah, I think C-list is fair, because Taylor's
I think he's higher than that now. I'm saying it's so? Like, oh, that's what I mean. Like, she's like, this guy's like a celebrity now. He's not just like a celebrity to us, he's a celebrity. Right. He's a celebrity. Yeah, so like those two can do whatever they want. You know, I don't necessarily think like Jason is going to be in the booth next year with someone. I think he's going to be closer to Peyton Manning or Pat McAfee in terms of like what they're doing. And also, God, I would much prefer the Kelseys than Pat McAfee as well. But I mean, again, a really good player. My dad and I were talking about it last night. Like, basically, like, what does it take for a lineman to get in the Hall of Fame? And it's basically like, did you play for one team for a long time? Yes. Did you were you an Iron Man? Did you play a lot of games? Yes. Mm-hmm. Was the team good? Like, did they have good offense, good run offense? Yes. There you go. I mean, because you look at Jason Peters, who is two spots down from him, was better. Mm-hmm. Like, Jason Peters is a clear-cut Hall of Famer. But yeah, he's just a really likable guy. You know, like, Travis, people are like, oh, Travis is such a douche now. But, like, Jason is just a really, really, just a really likable guy. And I was also told he hadn't retired, though, like, when that report came out after the season. He's like, oh, no, I'm not retired.
He pulled a Tom Brady. You can't announce it before I do, and if you do, I might spite you and come back. Jason is a very good dude, and I think, Pat, talking about his Hall of Fame case, you know, I haven't looked super far into it, but those are all good points, and I think the fact of just the tush push in general is also a boost to his resume.
Innovative.
Like, this man was the centerpiece to the most unstoppable play in football, and I think his case is only going to be helped next season when they inevitably run it far less effectively, if I had to guess. So,
or if they ban it.
It doesn't seem like they're going to ban it. I think even the NFL, just to go on a tangent, probably wants to see what it looks like once without Jason Kelce. And like, if it's just as effective, maybe they get rid of it. But we've watched other teams try to run it and be not super effective. I mean, there's a reason. So Jason certainly made his mark with that, and the extra little fame of his, you know, last name being Kelce and vaguely associated with, you know, a more glamorous player in Travis Kelce and a more glamorous celebrity in Taylor Swift certainly won't hurt his Hall of Fame case when that time comes. But thank you, Jason, for a great career. Good luck riding off into the sunset. And as far as the Manning thing goes, Pat, I think I'm with you. I think they're really funny in like scripted things, but they are, yeah, for like broadcast, like,
I've just never
great.
Been.
It's not
the
great.
Only times like I'll tune into the Manning cast is if there's like an interesting.
I don't watch it. Yeah.
If there's an interesting guest, like if there's a guest that I want to see, I'll tune in. But besides that, I just watch Monday Night Football on the boring old standard broadcast.
I'm with you, 100%. All right. Moving on to the franchise tags, Pat. Today was the deadline for franchise tags to be placed on players, and we saw many of them get placed. So just to recap, T. Higgins was tagged last week. Legarius Sneed also tagged several days ago. And now we've got the guys who were kind of up in the air. Also, both T. Higgins and Legarius Sneed could still be traded, so just keep
they
an eye on
like
those guys.
They seem like definitely the two most likely.
The rest of these
guys are probably going to stay put.
Yeah, everybody else is, their team is actively working to sign them to long-term deals, and they don't seem to want to get rid of them. So we're looking at Justin Madubuike of the Ravens, Jalen Johnson with the Bears, Antoine Winfield Jr. with the Bucks, Brian Burns with the Panthers, Michael Pittman Jr. with the Colts, and Josh Allen with the Jags. Long-term deals, Pat, certainly seem to be on the horizon for these guys. Their teams are not actively looking to move them. None of those tags. Very surprising. And the Jaguars specifically, Pat, to make room for Josh Allen, are making a few moves here. So they released Darius Williams, and they are also likely, at least rumored.
I believe that's official now.
Is it official now?
Scherf and yeah.
Okay, Brandon Scherf and Rayshon Jenkins to make room for Josh Allen. Now, this is a little disconcerting for the Jags in general. So Brandon Scherf was actually PFF's fourth highest rated guard in pass blocking. So
Brandon Scherf is really good.
The Jags are not losing a nothing piece here on the line. Like, they are losing a important piece here that protects Trevor Lawrence, and that line as a whole still wasn't very good last year. And now you take away one of your pivotal pieces. I would be a little nervous if I was A, Trevor Lawrence, or B, a Jags fan, just at how functional this offense might be. Obviously, you've got an entire offseason left to go. Free agency hasn't opened yet. We'll see how they fill that hole. But for now, you know, a little concerning. But this is the cost that it takes to, retain great players like Josh Allen sometimes.
Yeah, and I was looking at some of Josh Allen's numbers, and it just made me absolutely sick to my stomach that the Raiders took fucking Clelin Ferrell. before him. That hurts really, really bad. Josh Allen and Max Crosby coming off both ends. Oh, here we go. Clip it. God. Oh, but no. I mean, maybe the Jags would consider trying to get Sheriff back, but yeah, I mean, they must have weighed it out and said, this guy's not worth what we're paying him, and this guy is worth what we're trying to pay him.
Yeah.
And they did it. And I mean, as for some of the other guys, like, it seems like Antoine Winfield is going to get a long-term deal. Like, that is almost a certainty. Jalen Johnson, you know, to a lesser extent, but that's the same thing. It doesn't seem like we're sitting in any of these positions where any of these guys might hold out outside of, like, maybe, like, Snead. But even then, I don't think he's good enough to do that. So there's not going to nearly be as much drama as last year, because none of those running backs got tagged, and for good reason.
Yeah, no, none of those tags are a surprise. And as it pertains to Josh Allen, yeah, I mean, you got to retain a star any way you can. And look, as great as Brandon Scherff is, and that is a hole that's going to be on their line, guards are a little bit more replaceable than elite tackles are. So I think this is not as bad as it could be, but it's still it's not encouraging for a line that was already, you know, kind of eh. A tag that was a little bit surprising here, Kyle Duggar did not get the franchise tag. He got the transition tag. So
not on my radar at all.
Yeah, so this was interesting. And basically, for those of you that don't know, the transition tag is, here's the difference between it and the franchise tag. Basically, every franchise tag that gets applied to players is the non-exclusive franchise tag. So in theory, other teams can make offers to those players, and if that player were to leave, the team that player was previously on would get compensated with two first-round picks. The transition tag works similarly, except it is cheaper for the team applying it to the player. That player can still talk to other teams, but if that player were to leave for a new team, his previous team will not get compensated at all. So basically what this is a bet by the Patriots that they don't think
the Patriots also able to match, I believe. They're also, restricted free agency.
They are able to match.
Imagine they would in this case.
Exactly. So what this is from the Patriots is a gamble that, you know, no team is going to come with some godfather offer that they won't be able to match. And that, honestly, that Duggar may not receive an offer at all with a decent safety free agent class. So I just, there's no way on earth the Patriots, with all the cap room they have, would let Kyle Duggar walk for nothing. So all this tells me is that he is as good as a Patriot for, like, several years. There's an extension looming, I would think.
We've shit on Bill Belichick as a drafter, and rightfully so. But man, to get this kid out of Lenore Ryan, it was either the second or third round. It raised eyebrows. This kid can play. Like, what a find.
Yeah, this is a hard hitting safety that Bill plucked out of D2? I don't know. D7? I don't know. Looking like he's going to be a Patriot for a long time coming. So just because it's the transition tag, basically just, I guess, a slight risk reward for the Patriots, but it's ultimately, he's going to be a Patriot. The interesting consequence of this is that if any Patriot was going to be tagged, we thought it might be Mike Onwenu, the guard, who has been very, very good for the Patriots for the last few years. Instead, that is not the case. Obviously, you can only apply a tag to one player per team. So we'll see what happens here. I expect the Patriots to re-sign him again, as long as he wants to be a Patriot, that is, because that could factor in as well. But, like, the Patriots have all this cap room. This is a potential, like, cornerstone piece on your offensive line, and there's just no good reason to let him walk. So I imagine them not tagging him is hopefully a reflection that they also think they can re-sign him. So we'll see what happens with him.
Even though, obviously, you see this where a lot of offensive linemen are in really high demand, but the Patriots have the cap space to handle it. Like, if the Patriots were in a tighter cap spot, he'd be the one that they're tagging.
Right. Yeah. The only interesting part here is that the Patriots now have no control over whether he actually chooses to stay or not. They can't just keep him with the tag. So we'll see what happens once free agency opens up. Hopefully he is a New England Patriot once again, sooner rather than later. And then officially not tagged, past some guys that it was, you know, potentially up in the air. Christian Wilkins with the Miami Dolphins, and of course Saquon Barkley with the New York Giants. Neither of them tagged, so they will hit unrestricted free agency. Christian Wilkins is an interesting one to me because the Dolphins did not use their tag, and I imagine losing Christian Wilkins for nothing would be a pretty big blow. So we'll see what happens with him. That is certainly a big addition to this free agent class that teams didn't necessarily think would be there. I looked and I'm like, could the Patriots snipe him? Because again, we have $100 million in cap space, but we kind of... we have Devon Godshaw at Godshaw. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Terry Bradshaw
at defensive tackle. Certainly Wilkins much better. So, you know, I from my GM perspective, maybe we cut him. We take Wilkins. You know, replace one former Dolphin with another. Who knows? Either way, certainly a big piece hitting free agency. And then Saquon. We were pretty sure this was coming. It was just that Giants GM Joe Shane kind of floated the possibility. He's like, "Whoa, hold on, maybe we could still tag him." He didn't tag him.
They also didn't Saquon tag Xavier McKinney.
Yes, so the Giants elected just not to use their tag. Yeah. And so they could potentially get hit pretty hard here with their team getting poached. Saquon, you know,
I think he's gone.
I think so too. And I'm hoping it's Houston, which we floated, and I think it's just the most logical fit possible. It's for a team that needs a running back is, you know, slowly, I guess quickly peaking with C.J. Stroud and the rest of that offense. That team is just, that is the perfect spot for a 26-year-old running back in his prime to go and play in a high-powered offense. Speaking of the Texans, re-signed Dalton Schultz, 3 years, $36 million, kind of a, not random, but it's sort of random deal that popped up today. Dalton Schultz played pretty well for them, so he's going to stick around and be the Texans' tight end here now for the next 3 years, it seems. And then, Pat, the big, probably biggest quarterback domino, free agent-wise at least, Kirk Cousins, possibly going to Atlanta. Now, I know, I think we've talked about 1,500 different quarterbacks going to Atlanta because it's the most attractive place for a quarterback to go with all the weapons they have. But they are now, Atlanta is minus 225 Vegas favorites to land Kirk Cousins, and PFT is reporting that he is looking for houses in Atlanta. So, I will say off the top, this feels like one of those reports that we could look back on and be like, that meant nothing. Why the fuck you had bad info? That was stupid. Just because I feel like these things about like looking for houses and all this guy's saying this and that never actually come true. But we'll go off of it for now because it very well could be true. If Kirk Cousins goes to Atlanta, man, those weapons are just to the moon.
I love it.
It's a great fit.
And again, Kirk Cousins stays in the same territory he's been in is like a low-end QB1. A guy that, you know, you're not going to be thrilled when you draft him, but you're going to get pretty solid production. But I would love that so much. That for that trio of Bijan, London, and Pitts, like, that's a huge game changer in my opinion. Just to raise the floor, you know, we talked about how, like, Russ was a slight floor raise from Kenny Pickett. This is a huge floor raise from Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heineke or whoever the hell, Jonnu Smith. But yeah, that would just be, and I pretty much think that's gonna happen. Like, I would be very surprised if he is not a Falcon. It just seems like the stars are aligning there, and he could be, you know, the glue that offense desperately needs.
Yeah, desperately. It's interesting because again, there's the Justin Fields factor. We were sitting here last week talking about how, you know, it seemed like maybe he was earmarked for the Falcons, but the fact that trade still has not happened tells me that it could be leaning toward this. Like, the Falcons would rather wait till free agency opens, go get Kirk, and you know, maybe Fields doesn't get traded till free agency opens, because like the Bears, you know, the Bears have come out and said they're motivated and they want to get this deal done. I think other teams, specifically the Falcons, are like, we want to see if we can get Kirk first. Sorry. So, and if they don't, they don't.
I would, you know, as young as Fields is and the potential, I'd rather have Kirk Cousins right now. Like, talking as a fan of a team who needs a quarterback, I would much rather have Kirk Cousins than Justin Fields. But that said, Justin Fields is probably, not probably, he is the number two option in terms of not, you know, not outside of the draft, of course.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have Fields. From the Falcons' perspective, it's different because the Falcons are quite literally equipped to win a Super Bowl if they get a quarterback like Kirk Cousins. Like, that, it's not an impossible task with the talent they have on that roster. But in general, like, for a team like the Raiders, oh my god, my camera died.
You look good, man. This?
Thank you. I'm looking sexy. Hold on, I'll replace the battery in a second. But in general, for a team like the Raiders, you know, getting a guy who's 20, whatever, 25 compared to 35, 24 compared to 35, I feel like that makes a lot more sense.
That's fair.
You know, I could see that. I don't know where Justin Fields is ultimately going to end up. It seems like he's being rumored kind of everywhere at this point.
That's the thing.
So it's very, I don't know.
If we're saying like, oh, Kirk to Atlanta, great. I just lost my train of thought. Maybe Russ to Pittsburgh, perhaps. Mm-hmm. The top three teams are taking quarterbacks, the Bears, the Commanders, and the Patriots. We think the Broncos are going to trade up for probably J.J. McCarthy. That leaves the Raiders and the Vikings really as potential landing spots. But like, would Justin Fields wouldn't have a say, but like, would Justin Fields and Luke Getsy work?
That's
what I mean. Like, that's just really, really, really dubious. Like, I think Minnesota would be probably the likeliest spot for Fields right now.
Yeah, I mean, I will say Justin Fields in that Viking purple sounds pretty good. I think that would look pretty good. Let's see if I can get my camera back on here. And bang, bang, there we go. Luckily, I have camera batteries next to me. For anybody watching live, sorry you had to be deprived of my beautiful face for a little bit. But
just looking at me for a while.
that's a tough scene. I think Justin Fields possibly landing in Minnesota is certainly on the table, but Pat, there is a fun little nugget rumor from Rich Eisen. Trey Lance could apparently be the new quarterback in Minnesota. He is a Minnesota native. He's from Marshall, Minnesota, and this is literally just a rumor from Rich Eisen, but Rich Eisen is not like an incredible source. It's worth thinking about as a possibility of coming true. So What would you think of that, Pat? Is that just a massive mistake, or is there some potential?
I would not just bring in Trey Lance and say, okay, here's the keys, drive this car. If you want to bring him in to compete with someone else, sure, great. Because we still really haven't seen what Trey Lance can do. Like, for that fit in San Francisco was just awful. Was awful.
Yep.
Obviously the rumor was that Kyle Shanahan wanted Mac Jones. And Mac Jones would have been a much better fit, because you look at what guys like Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy have done in his system. We've never really got to see Lance, because I think Shanahan saw straight up, you know, in the offseason last year, like, this guy's not it, and he's never going to be it for us. But who's to say he's not going to be it for someone else? You know, we're still talking about a guy who's got a missile of an arm, great athleticism, he can run. But that said, I am not willing, again, like the Raiders say, if the Raiders brought in him to compete with someone else, sure, but I would not feel comfortable just flat out bringing in Trey Lance and saying, hey, you are our guy. I can't do it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, look, I want as much as anybody to see what he can do with game reps. I'm not in the camp that like this is some sleeping giant prospect. Like, I think a lot of people, honestly, a lot of younger kids probably who are just too active on social media have disillusioned themselves into thinking that Trey is still going to be this guy, you know, who is worthy of being the third overall pick and worthy of a trade of three first round picks to go up and get him. To me, it's just if the rumor is true, it's definitely an indication that the Vikings are a little down bad and, you know, kind of scrambling for options, assuming Kirk wants to leave, which regardless of if it's for Atlanta or not, very much seems like Kirk's time in Minnesota is done. Look, this is, Trey Lance is a guy who was traded from San Francisco to Dallas for a fourth round pick. Like, no other team was willing to pony up anything more than a fourth rounder for this guy. And I know circumstances have changed, because that trade was right before the season. Obviously the Vikings were not thinking like, we're going to need a guy to replace Kirk after this year. Like, that wasn't necessarily. Kirk's going to tear his Achilles. Yeah, I understand we're in a different place, but I can't imagine any team, if they weren't willing to, you know, outbid the Cowboys for him with a fourth round pick. Like, there's no way any team around the NFL is looking at Trey Lance and thinking he's some dark horse, like, could potentially be really good guy. He would be a complete dart throw for Minnesota. But yeah, it would be certainly weird if it transpired the way Rich Eisen kind of made it sound, which is that Lance would be somewhat anointed as the guy. So yeah, I can't imagine that happens. That would be a shocking development.
And I thought about, I don't know if this is necessarily going to happen, but at least I think it should, maybe. The Saints, for a quarterback like Justin Fields, Derek Carr, I love the dude. Mm-hmm. He's bad.
Yeah.
And Jameis Winston, love the dude. He's bad. Like,
and you can say the same about Fields, but at least he's younger, I guess.
I would much rather have Fields right now. But because Dennis Allen's seat is on fire. Like, it's not even a hot seat. Like, the fire department is actively working to put it out.
Saints are broke as fuck is the problem.
That's the thing. It's like, so, but in theory, that could be, or maybe should be, another QB spot. Obviously not for fucking Trey Lance, but maybe Justin Fields. But again, we will see. I mean, we've still got 2 weeks. Like, well, this time in 2 weeks, we'll be talking about...
8 days until free agency opens, March 13th.
Oh, so of course it opens the day.
Our next show will be a day before free agency opens, yes.
Do I work that next day? Could we move that? That might not be a terrible idea.
It might not be. My only thing is how much, I guess there'd be a decent amount of hours that would transpire. I have pea brain. I don't remember how like hot and heavy free agency is right off the bat. Like, are we going to see a bunch of deals in the first like 2 hours?
Typically, I think it's not. I don't think it's as heavy as NBA free agency.
The NBA is the deals are done beforehand. Yeah, they just don't tell anybody.
Hilarious tampering. One sec. Let me look. Let me look at my work schedule. 6:30. We'd have to do it. Yeah. I don't know.
We might as well just wait. We'll let the full week of free agency play out.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have more to talk about, but a fair thought. Thinking out loud on air.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, sorry, guys, you've been privy to our team's chat really quick. But look, that is it as far as the major moves. You don't wear pants during the show. I'm calling HR. That is it.
You're lucky I've got underwear on
of the week.
You know what?
This is on YouTube, Pat. This is not on any of those. This is not an OnlyFans podcast. Pat's naked from the waist down, I think, now.
Yeah, we're dicks out on the podcast right now.
If your camera falls, we're canceled.
It's my laptop. All right, so if this thing somehow falls and pans down,
then we deserve what we get.
It would need to be zoomed in like 100% anyway to see it. So,
God damn it. Okay, let me transition now.
Yo, what the fuck is happening? What the hell is going on?
That will do it for the biggest moves of the week. Pat, we did have another big event, not Pat's wiener, from this past week, which was the NFL Combine. So, in general, the Combine, I find... slightly silly, but there were a bunch of headlines.
Fluster for sure.
There were a bunch of headlines that came out of it. Most notably, Xavier Worthy breaking the sound barrier with his 40-yard dash, setting a new record for the 40-yard dash with a 4.22 or 4.21.
I think it was 4.21.
4.21, whatever it was, he broke the record and is certainly on a lot more people's radars. Pat, you have here that he was so fast that he summoned the ghost of Al Davis, which...
like the WWE meme where Vince McMahon comes out of the... or is that... or whoever comes out of the fucking casket.
The Undertaker. Undertaker comes out of the casket, yes. And look, last week we were asked, we had a viewer question, who would be the biggest riser from the Combine? It's him. It's Xavier Worthy. Anytime you break a record that... granted, was held by John Ross, right? That could be a good or a bad thing, but at least he's making the headlines, you know, setting himself apart from some of the other, like, again, tier two sort of NFL draft wide receivers. At the top, you've got Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze. After that, it's like, we'll figure it out who the next best guys are. We think we have an idea, but Xavier Worthy, you know, potentially in that conversation at least now. Do we think, Pat, this is an important question, that you could beat his time given a 4.5 second cushion?
So basically, this came up at work, and the person that posed it was actually saying it about a dude that was actually bigger than me, a bigger dude than I am. So I think I'm a bit more fleet footed. I mean, I think I can run an 8.7. I think I can run an 8.7 40.
I think you could too.
But that's not funny. So let's say 4 seconds. Let's just say fours. I think we're getting into nervous territory.
8-2 is where it gets dicey.
Yeah, I think 8-2 is tough to ask for. I'll probably run like a 9-11 or something hilarious.
Jesus but Christ. We timed 40s like years ago, so my time would definitely be different now, but we timed 40s probably when I was a sophomore in high school, sophomore in college, just for fun. And I think I ran like a 6 even. Granted, I weighed about 150 pounds at the time, so like understandable, but yeah, I think still I'm definitely breaking the plus 4 seconds.
You can do it. I mean, you're in good shape. I'm in
bulkier
rough
than
shape.
I once was, but your back might just give out mid-run.
Yeah, I might just like fucking disintegrate.
Yeah, guys, let me know what you think my Vegas line would need to be that it would be dicey whether I broke it or not. Again, Xavier Worthy ran a 4-2. I'm thinking we take plus 2.5.
Oh boy!
But it's plus 2.5. That would take it to 6-7. Again, I think if I'm remembering right, I think I ran about a 6 back then. So, you know, a terrible form. I don't know how to fucking run it. But
our boy Nate in the chat, Pat wants to be the next coach of the Buffalo Bills. Confirmed. Bring me in as a motivational speaker, Sean McDermott.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say the same shit that you do.
Just referencing various terrorist attacks. The fact that happened, that is, I will not let that be forgotten.
Dude, that is one of my favorite things that has happened in, honestly, recent memory in the NFL.
This season really ran the spectrum of just like ridiculous storylines that should hopefully be remembered, but people have such short memories that a lot of it will get lost. But like you've got, you know, the Pastronaut Josh Dobbs and his insanity running. I think like right behind that, you've got Sean McDermott 9/11 fucking speech. All right. Some other highlights from the NFL Combine, mostly about the 40 times because that's all people really care about. Jalen Wright, Tennessee running back, ran a 4.38, which was a little bit faster than people might have thought, so he is now a little bit more on the radar of sleeper running backs. We're looking at a guy who's probably going somewhere inside the top 100 or so, but I think
think that there's a clear cut number one. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking.
Mel Kiper suggested he could be RB1, which is not a total shock just because this class didn't have any clear-cut.
They didn't have a Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, there's no Bijan Robinson. There's no Saquon. There's no Ezekiel Elliott in this draft. Far from it. So maybe he will be. Maybe top 100 is underselling it. Maybe he's top 50. But we're not looking at a day one pick for really any running back. But either way, Jalen Wright has garnered some hype.
I think we'll get
his 40-yarder. Think we'll get one on day one?
Really? I think we're going to get... No, not day one. Oh, sorry. I meant to say day two. One. Oh, day one.
No, I could see them on day two.
I don't know why I thought you just said in the first three rounds, but okay, no, maybe, God, no. Yeah,
maybe I misspoke. Who knows? Another running back here. Isaac Garendo. Don't mind us. We just have ADHD like Family Guy.
Dude, I literally got home from work, disintegrated my toilet, and then got on this thing. I am fucking wrecked right now, man.
That's fried. All right, we'll continue here. Another running back that made some headlines because he ran an even faster 40, Isaac Garendo out of Louisville. He ran a 4.33. So look, again, and this is why I don't think like the combine should matter all that much. Like I feel like people are gonna overrate and be like, oh, this is like a dude now. Like he's fast. He's faster than we thought he was, but that doesn't mean he has good vision or anything like that.
The other thing that was the most notable about Garendo's is that he was the fastest 40 time by a running back over 220 pounds since 2003.
Okay.
So I think it's more so the speed and the size that, but again, I still probably put him behind Blake Corum, Jonathan Brooks, Jalen Wright. Like he's still kind of like a fringe top five guy here, but I think in the lead up to this draft, this order of running backs is going to flip flop all over the place. But like, I bet a couple of them we'll be talking about at least a couple of them. In terms of fantasy,
come
late summer when we're starting to really get into draft season.
I mean, look, guys find themselves in just very advantageous situations as late as day 3 of the draft, and
as late as
round 5, 6, even undrafted. I mean, even Dameon Pierce was what, like a 4th round pick, I believe, yep. And just stumbled into a starting role in year 1, where he was very, very good. Year 2, not so much. But Pat, we've also got Brian Thomas. This was maybe a more notable 40 time than Xavier Worthy, strictly because Thomas ran a 4.33. So you're looking at, you know, 0.12 seconds slower than Worthy. But Thomas is 6'3", 209. Worthy is 5'11", 165. Sorry, I have 265 here. He's not 265 pounds. 5'11", 165. So, like, that's a small dude. He's running super fast, not taking that away from him. But Brian Thomas, to have that combination of just size and speed, that is certainly going to be intriguing for NFL team.
I do think he's going to end up being the 4th one off the board after Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors in whatever order. But I think he's going to stand out from that kind of B tier, and be that first guy off. But yeah, I liked him to the Bucks as like a Mike Evans replacement. But this is a guy that could work. It's a guy that could work anywhere. This is a guy that'll work anywhere. So
I'll tell you what, Brian Thomas would be a guy I'd be thrilled to have in New England if to potentially trade back into the middle or, you know, back end of the first round, wherever Brian Thomas ends up going, to pair with our hopefully new quarterback. Pat, speaking of quarterbacks, probably the biggest one that stood out at the combine, Michael Penix, one of the more impressive throwers, which we knew coming in, but he just kept showing it day in and day out at the combine. Penix also measured in at 6'2", which that wasn't a surprise, but what was maybe a surprise, he registered top 10 all-time hand size at the combine. Don't wink at me. With 10 and a half inches, don't wink at that either, which is the same as Anthony Richardson last year.
All you need is 3.
It's all about the motion in the ocean. Same as Anthony Richardson last year, but Anthony Richardson is 6'6". So we're looking at two guys, same hand size, which in the NFL, let's be honest, does matter a little bit. And Penix is 4 inches shorter and has the same size hand. So this is sort of a measurement that could translate to him being a viable NFL quarterback more so than people might have thought just going off the tape.
I just think the biggest thing with Michael Penix is the fact that he's had 2 major knee injuries. Like, I think had he not had that, I think we're talking about probably a guaranteed first rounder. I would say so, but, and you know, in a few years from now, teams may be kicking themselves, be like, oh man, we were worried about him and now he's tearing up the NFL, which right. I don't think is a completely unrealistic scenario, no, but
certainly not.
But yeah, I mean, I think, well, yeah, the hand size, aside, I think people know what kind of skills he has. It's just going to be like, are teams willing to, to take a chance on a guy with such a, you know, daunting injury history? And I do think it is going to knock him out of the first round. I do think we're not going to see him taken until day 2.
Yeah, but Penix is a guy, again, in this, I'm not saying this just because his hand's measured in as being pretty fucking big, is a guy that I think all these QB needy teams that aren't in the top 3 or 4 need to be having their eyes on Michael Penix in the second round or wherever the value deems appropriate for him, because he's a guy that I could very easily see, like you said, Pat, you know, tearing up the NFL, because we've seen he has really all the skills to do it. And if the only red flags are injury and I guess age, but every quarterback in this draft is actually a little bit older than you would think, except for Drake May. I believe Drake May is only 22. But all these guys are kind of, you know, approaching 25 in a way. Yeah. I don't think that should be a major knock on Penix. And yeah, if he can stay healthy, which I mean, he just did it this past year in college to an incredible degree. This could be a guy that it's like you said, wow, how do we miss out on him? So if teams need a quarterback and are not positioned to get one of the top ones, that's, I think, the guy they should be going for. So a guy we've also talked about, Pat, on the show quite a bit is Blake Corum. Now, speaking of measurements, he is a short boy. Actually, he was listed on Michigan's website as 5'8", actually measured in at under 5'8", 5'7", and 6'8", which is not obviously very far off of 5'8". Which is not far off of 5'8", but it goes to show that it was not his measurement was not underselling him by any means. And the fact of the matter, and why this matters maybe a little bit, is there are just not many successful running backs at that height. I mean, you have the outliers. You have Barry Sanders. You have Maurice Jones-Drew, who were very short and obviously incredibly good at the position.
Lots of, but more so the gadget guys have kind of worked, like Darren Sproles.
Mm-hmm.
for example. But yeah, if you want to be like a true pure runner, Sanders and MJD are really the only two that came to my mind.
Yeah, so it's tough. Look, he's going to be an outlier in terms of his size if he's going to be getting an opportunity in the NFL as like a primary ball carrier. But the way he runs, I mean, we've seen what he can do as a running back. So I feel like even though he is a physical outlier, this is still a guy that I have decent faith in. It's just if you are strictly an analytics guy and strictly going off of the history of what players succeed based on the heights and weights that they are, this is definitely a guy that is just a little bit more dicey of a proposition than maybe we thought he was when we thought he was, you know, a full 5'8 or maybe a secret 5'9 that we didn't know about. He's short, and if he succeeds in the NFL, it's going to be going against the grain of most running backs that have seen success in the NFL, although there are the exceptions like MJD and Barry Sanders.
Just the exceptions, yeah.
All right, there were obviously a bunch of guys also who just didn't participate in the Combine, Pat. We mentioned this last week. You know, you got Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers did not participate. Sam Hartman, I mentioned him earlier, funny enough, was the only quarterback to run the 40. So you had guys do the measurements and you had guys do some passing drills, but Hartman was the only one to run the 40, and to the point where he actually had to wait and like catch his breath before he ran his second rep, because normally you don't have to worry about that. You just have the other quarterbacks go, and by the time you're next up, like your breath is obviously going to be caught. But he was the only one running it. And this just brought up a question, and I don't want this to be like jumping to conclusions, but with all the guys that opted out, and with that just funny visual of Hartman having to run the 40 back-to-back reps, Pat, do you think the Combine's dying? Do you think we're heading toward a point where not necessarily that it will go away anytime soon, but that this, you know, the top prospects are going to continue to opt out the way they did this year?
Yes. I think basically what the Combine is becoming for players that want to raise their stock, for guys who, you know, are going in the, you know, middle late first round, or guys that, you know, feel like they're fortunate to be invited to the Combine. You know, not people realize not everybody goes to the Combine, you know, so like some guys like, you know, maybe we'll be talking about it at the end of the year, the guy that kind of burst onto the scene from the Combine and had a good rookie year. Hello, Puka. But if you're one of these top guys, I don't see why you would do it, because obviously you're going to have your pro day where you're in a familiar setting, throwing to your people, doing whatever, and teams are going to want to work you out anyway. Mm-hmm. So like, if a team is interested in you at the top of the board, they're going to say, hey, we want you to work out for us. And you say, okay, because, you know, that's where realistically where you're going. I feel like the Combine can really only hurt these guys sometimes, literally, but but rare, but still. And it's just like, I feel like if you're like Drake May or Jaden Daniels or JJ McCarthy, it's like, you're going to hurt your stock. Like, you, if anything, you might hurt your stock. You might have, like, what if you go out there and have a bad day in drills? Mm-hmm. You're going to have all these talking heads, you know, going off about you. So, no, yeah, I think it's just more so like, almost kind of like the Senior Bowl, where it's like, you know, maybe displaying some, you know, lesser known guys, because there is great use to it. I'm sure the teams are very glad it exists. So,
yeah, to me, I've kind of been a Combine hater a little bit over the years, because, like, obviously I understand the benefits of, like, all these players and all these GMs and coaches, you know, being in the same place if they want to be. Not every coach goes, but being in the place where they can talk to these guys and especially like get the measurements and find out really what these guys are, not what their team website may or may not be inflating them to be. Like, JJ McCarthy actually measured in as being a little bit bigger than people thought he was. I believe he weighed in like almost 20 pounds heavier than
Fatty,
which maybe he was just pulling a Bryce Young, because we remember last year Bryce Young weighed in way heavier than he fucking is. He's a small guy. But like, in general, to me, the Combine was like, you have all these like uber specific drills that really are only testing your aptitude to run that drill. And I'm like, why? It just brought me back to like John Ross, who was ran an incredible 40 and was just a terrible football player.
Darius Hayward Bay.
Yeah, but the 40 raised his stock so much. And I'm like, at what point are teams going to be like, okay, these are not really applicable to the NFL. Why are we letting the Combine, you know, kind of dictate our thoughts on these guys? But I also see it from the perspective that you are looking for guys who are high character players as well who are going to be mature in the NFL.
Interviews and are important too, yeah.
The interviews are important, but also the training for the combine. Like, yeah, these drills may not be a reflection of like what your talent or skill level is going to be in the NFL. Like the way you run the 40 does not dictate obviously your ability to run a route, but it does dictate your work ethic for can you train for this thing that is potentially going to help you and how seriously do you take it? And like those are the kind of things to, you know, maybe weed out some of the lazier players or the guys that don't have the right mindset to succeed in the NFL. And this is not including the top guys like Marvin Harrison, and I'm not calling them lazy by any means, but just some of these guys, like, I think you could look at it that way as just trying to find guys who, like, you know, they did their preparation, they did their homework, they prepared for the combine, and okay, this is how they're gonna prepare for games now. They're gonna be diligent and they're gonna work really hard. So I get it from that perspective. As long as teams have it from that perspective, I'm okay with it. I just hate that, like, you know, people might see Xavier Worthy run a super fast 40 and immediately they're like, oh, I want to draft this guy. Like, I hope
Xavier
that's not
Worthy
what
goes eighth overall the way John Ross did, then I think, you know, yeah, we'll need to be.
It's like Xavier Worthy, it is notable that he, I guess, put in the work to like have the right fundamentals for the 40 and be able to run it super fast.
Oh, my camera
died again. I'm letting that one go this time. So it's great that he, you know, put in that work, but overall, like, I just don't want it to be reflective of like what his ceiling is talent wise. Work ethic wise, sure, but it's just, I feel like the combine is a little more nuanced than what some people look at it as.
Yeah, have your interviews too, like if that's what you want to make it more so about, like almost like the winter meetings in baseball amongst the GMs. If you want to make it something like that, then sure, go for it. But yeah, I've never been one, like, I could not tell you the last time I've like watched the combine.
Yeah.
Or even cared to, or even cared a whole lot about looking about stuff that happens. I think if you're gonna more so see what these guys are like in film, in game film.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let me see if I can. Yeah, I'm just not gonna bother with the camera.
Welcome to the Pat Show.
This is in fact the Pat Show. All right, we will finish out with our viewer questions.
This is the Pat Show. So we're gonna finish out with some viewer questions. First up, this is from Spectrum of Souls. This is the Pat Show.
Hey, you want this to be the Pat Show? You don't even have sound effect privileges. So
do the sound effect first. Do the sound effect.
Oh yeah, now you
cue
need
the
me.
Cue.
We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. Wonder who it's from.
Okay, welcome back to the Pat Show, and we're going to wrap up as we always do with our viewer questions. This one is from Spectrum of Souls. I'm assuming this was Instagram we got this from here.
Yep.
In a similar light to the question I posed about running a 40, could you and Pat, in your athletic primes, stop Derrick Henry one-on-one in the open field for $100,000? No.
I'm back.
Oh, he's back. Pat Show.
Pat Show's over. Yeah. So the answer to this, Pat turned his camera off. The answer to this is a resounding no. I respect you putting in the question or adding to the question the $100,000 thing as if that's going to make any fucking difference to whether this is possible or not. Like, I'm more motivated. Can't shoot him.
I was going to ask if we could shoot him. I was going to ask if I could have a gun.
No, you can't have a gun. And also, let me remind everyone, my athletic prime, depending how you look at it, is either like a year ago when I was a little more muscular and still only about 165 pounds, or it's when I was in college and at my real like leanest where I was at 152 pounds. Guess what? I'm not taking Derrick Henry
Or when you were fat, but you were balling out in town ball though.
Yeah, that's true. I did
have a thing. What's athletic prime? Man. Just like being in the best shape of your life. See, here's the thing is for me, despite always growing up on the fat side, I was never like strong. Like I never played football. Like I was never tough. I was never aggressive. Like even in playing baseball, like I would come up to the plate, everyone would be like, back up. No, I was a contact hitter, man. I was slapping singles like crazy. I've never been a strong person. So hell no.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'd probably disintegrate. He'd put me on skate. He'd stiff arm me. And it would kill me.
Yeah. You could
It would literally kill me.
you could give me a billion chances, and Derrick Henry is putting my ass in the fucking grave every single time. So, no, absolutely not. Thank you for the question, though. And then our last question, would you rather New England signs Jacoby or Flacco as their vet QB? This question from Tactical Mech, our resident Patriots fan, and someone I know very well. You know, it's a good question. I think it depends on what direction the Patriots go with the rest of the roster, because if, like, if we're at a point where, you know, we have some good receiving weapons this year, if we trade up and get a guy like Brian Thomas, I'm okay going to get Flacco because that man is just going to chuck the ball down the field, and I think it would at least be fun to watch. Either way, these guys are placeholders and I think very good potential mentors for whatever rookie quarterback we bring in. It's just a matter of, like, how, what kind of play style do I want to watch for the first, you know, this will not be a situation, I don't think, where the vet starts the full year and then, like, Drake May or Jaden Daniels or whoever we get starts next year. It's going to be a guy who starts for probably five games, and now, then we get the rookie in there.
Oh, see, I kind of view this question more so as like, hey, what if the Patriots take Marvin Harrison at 3 and are getting their, you know, their starting quarterback? That's the way I saw it. I mean, I think if they get Jaden Daniels or Drake May, I think they're starting. I think they're starting to start the year. But I think you'd rather have Jacoby Brissett just because, like, I feel like Joe Flacco last year was just so much of a Linsanity run. Like, we saw him be out of the league. We saw him, you know, be a backup. And he's just old. How this guy's got to be almost 40.
Flacco's like 39, I'm pretty sure. He's like almost
40. And Jacoby Brissett, we've seen at the very least, he is passable. We saw in Indianapolis, we saw it in Cleveland. I bet you Cleveland wish they had Jacoby Brissett still this year.
Oh, I'm sure.
And honestly, there were a lot of times in Washington where they probably should have went with Jacoby Brissett over Sam Howell. So I honestly think whether it's going to be someone that you're going to start or a backup, I think Jacoby Brissett is a perfect fit. And he's an old friend.
Yeah, he is. I approached this question based on the report of what the Patriots want to do at quarterback, which is draft a guy and have a veteran and let the guy sit.
That's what they always say.
It is what they. Anthony but the Patriots Richardson. Are the Patriots are uniquely equipped to do it, though. I think. True. I mean, you've got guys who are, you know, outside of Caleb, even Caleb are potentially raw. And if you have a, like, the Patriots are such a likely non-competitive team this upcoming year that you might as well sit the guy for a few games if you feel like that's what's best. So yeah, just from a vet perspective with that, like, I think both guys would work. Jacoby Brissett, it's funny, like, I want to say he knows the system. I mean, does he? We're about to have a completely new system than when Jacoby was here
did
last
he play
time
with,
you know?
Gerard May? No, I don't think he did, but
no, I don't think Gerard was done by like 2016 or something like that. But yeah, look, I'd be happy with either one. Which one would I rather? Truthfully, what I want is for the Patriots to somehow find themselves some skill players. If it is a Calvin Ridley along with a guy that we draft, then maybe Flacco will be a little bit more fun. But truthfully, either way, I'm just looking forward to when we get to the point that the rookie quarterback starts. And I hope they stick by their alleged plan to draft a quarterback at 3, because I still think that's the right move, even though I love Marvin Harrison as a player.
Yeah, Brissett came in the year after Gerard Mayo retired, but he went straight to
close.
I think he went straight to the coaching staff, though. So he probably is at least familiar in some extent.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes sense. I'm not a huge fan of the whole sitting out thing in general, unless, like, you're going to sit him out for the whole year or, like, plan to sit him out the whole year. Like with Will Levis, for example, like, they were sitting Will Levis and then Tannehill got hurt and then they had no choice. Like, that's fine. But, like, I loved when the Colts just went with Anthony Richardson and when the Panthers finally just stopped pretending Andy Dalton was a thing and just said, this is Bryce Young's team. Like, you're taking a guy third overall. Like, you should be able to start right away. But I understand, and like you said too, it's not like they're going to be trying to win a Super Bowl and win a ton of games this year, so you're not going to necessarily, you know, need your quote-unquote best or most potential out of your quarterback.
Yeah, that's the thing to me. And both these quarterbacks are going to be guys that if we bring one of them in, like, they're going to know that they are going to be benched at some point and be okay with that more than likely. Like, it's just it's a matter of the situation, and I think they understand what situation they are in. And as far as, like, whether I want the guy to start week one, the rookie, whoever that may be, I don't really care. Like, as long as I see him before, you know, week 8, hopefully. I understand where the Patriots are at this point. I'm just excited we are making the right steps now toward rebuilding, because this past year was just, by the time like week 5 transpired, we knew that the season was lost and we just kind of had to sit there and take it. So I can deal with going 4-13 again if it's in the interest of, you know, figuring future, out if yeah. we have a quarterback and kind of building up some guys on the roster. So we'll see what happens. Don't really care which of them we get. Making me pick, gun to my head right now, I'll take Brissett just because he's not 40. But Flacco could still be fun. All right, guys, that will do it for this episode of Off the Bench, where my camera died twice, but thankfully I am here to say goodbye.
The Pat Show!
The Pat Show has been canceled after 2 minutes because of vulgarity and
being sexual being content. Naked naked for a portion of it,
and Pat is now having a stroke. All right, for Pat Gustafson, because he can't speak anymore, I'm Brandon Carney, and we'll see you guys next week.
Take me out the pasture. Bye bye.